Good morning, everyone, and a happy Black Friday from Westminster.
How you doing, man?
Fucking timing.
Happy Black Friday to everybody. My name is Saeed Khan, and welcome to another episode of The Week That Was. And yes, you weren't imagining things. We have gone back to our old intro music. We had an anomaly last week, but we made it through. Thank you,
Nancy. That was a good one.
It was a good one.
I liked it.
Apparently, it costs too much money to get the licensing rights to Detroit Rock City. So
we're
going to have to wait on that. Well, we've got a wonderful lineup today talking about what sometimes people feel is a slow week with the holidays here in the United States, but it is anything but. So we have retired Detroit detective Ira Todd.
Hello.
Joined, actually, and I don't know, is this the first time that we've had a father-son combo?
Oh,
the second?
Yes.
First time, second time
for Brian, though.
Yeah. Okay. History making. We have web editor from the Detroit Free Press and Ira's son, Brian Todd. We have back-to-back weeks, attorney Joel Sklar. Welcome back, Joel.
Good morning.
Veteran journalist Nancy Derringer. And coming to us from Israel, Alan Lengel. Alan, how are things across two ponds?
It's really been kind of fascinating. I mean, the other day there were two bombings in Jerusalem, and I happen to be I've been saying Jerusalem, but I happen to be visiting my cousins in Haifa at the time. But It certainly puts a chill on it. The next night I was out having dinner and I was sitting out at a sidewalk cafe, and there were a lot more cops out there, and you can feel the impact of that. And, you know, it's complicated, as they say, because Netanyahu's, you know, is gotten elected, has been able to form a coalition. And Nancy accused me of being a lazy journalist here, but I've talked to a lot of cab drivers, and, you know, some of the Jewish cab drivers, one who just, I'm in Tel Aviv now, took me from the train station to the hotel. He was like, you know, we need to be strong in Israel. You have to be tough. And in the Middle East, you can forget about it if you're not going to survive without. So he's for Netanyahu, but, and, you know, the Arab cab drivers, I would say Netanyahu hates the Arabs. And so one of the horrible things beyond that, I mean, we're going to have he's had to form a coalition. So the coalition includes the very religious people. Now, the very religious people are nuts about the West Bank. There's not going to be any peace with them. So they're trying to get the ministry that is ahead of developments in the West Bank, which is not good for any, you know, not that we're close to peace here, but it's not good. And also the fact that it's really horrible, and it's sort of very Trumpian, is that with these coalitions, they say, okay, we'll be part of your coalition, but you have to put this guy, Aryeh Deri, you got to make him foreign minister. This guy happens to have been convicted of bribery when he was the interior minister, served at prison time, has convicted of tax evasion, and then they've got other people who are totally unqualified, and so you start to think, oh my gosh. And I see some of the cab drivers who are, you know, Israeli, who voted for Netanyahu, they go, yeah, Netanyahu is like Trump. And I go, I don't like Trump. And so it's really, you know, troublesome. And I think you're going to see more, you know, the Arabs are pissed. And you know, frankly, my cousins who are, you know, who are liberal, they're pissed about it because they just see it's just a total mess. So. Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that Israel has its own version of the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Very extremes, very irrational, very unqualified, like, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's probably going to get all these great committee assignments now, you know. The world's fucked.
So who in the new coalition is calling for Gentile space lasers as being, you know, the biggest threat facing us?
Ah, I have to look into that one, but okay. I'm sure there's somebody.
And by the way, so how much longer are you going to be there, Alan?
Till December the 7th.
So. Huh. So While you're there, just a small ask, if you can work on your Arabic taxi driver accent just to balance it out.
I know how to say assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Wow, you just...
I got that down. So.
Boy, you and Pete Buttigieg with the Iraq and the Arabic lately.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Here's my cousin from New York.
David. David Wendell.
He's a mensch.
Yeah,
characters who were considered beyond the pale in Israeli politics 20 years ago are now legitimized by office. Seems to be the case. And certainly we have some people here in the U.S., except it looks like, and can you believe it's been 14 years since she first came on the stage? Sarah Palin apparently is not going to Washington. So there are some moments of glimmer.
There's an interesting thing on, I can't remember, it's on maybe Showtime, where they do a thing on the Lincoln Project, and they interview Steve Schmidt, who is McCain's guy, and he says, when we ask Sarah Palin, when we're preparing her for the debates, and say, now, NATO, and she says, well, what's that? And he said, oh, shit.
Didn't we talk about this once before?
Yeah,
I remember talking about... the way they dramatized it in the movie, they had
a game change.
Yeah, game change. It was, he said, we need to start working on this stuff. So please tell me who the head of government is in the UK. And she goes, oh, that's easy. The Queen. No.
Well, I think NATO is Plato's monochromatic poor cousin.
Yeah.
But speaking of Mr. Smith going to Washington, we have now Attorney General Merrick Garland, who appointed a special counsel by the name of Jack Smith. And it seems from all accounts and from those who seem to be in the know that he means business. I think one of the best quotes I read, and I'm not sure from who it was, it says that if you thought that some so-and-so special prosecutor is bad, Jack Smith makes me look like a golden retriever puppy. Yeah. So it seems as though his reputation precedes him. It seems as though he is particularly well ensconced in the field of corruption. And he's being brought in part for the optics, I imagine, by Attorney General Garland in order to investigate the Mar-a-Lago case and the January 6th case. So where do you think this is going? And I know usually we have Attorney Steve Fishman, who has us on the indictment watch count.
He does, and he knows.
So where is this going, everybody?
It's inching closer to an indictment. I think the Mar-a-Lago document case is clean as hell, very clear, very easy to prosecute. It's probably less than a week trial. It's just not a difficult case. So I think we're marching toward an indictment. I guess it'll also involve some of the January 6th issues, but the Mar-a-Lago document, it's all document. It's just an easy case to try and win. Huh. So I think he will be indicted on those. I think it's clear, and I don't think it's a difficult prosecution, all things being equal.
Ira, it looked like the former president had a pretty bad week. I think even when it came to the case in Georgia, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham finally had to testify. There were also some rebukes at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta regarding the special master. Not exactly a good week of gratitude for the Donald.
No, I think his wall is tumbling down. And me and Al talk about this all the time. And I've been saying this years ago. I say, they're going to get him. They are going to tear his behind up. Trump's in a lot of trouble, you know. And I watch investigation go for, 20, 30 years. And this is moving pretty fast. But you can just look at it. I agree with Joel and Steve and everybody. They're going to not only indict this man, they're going to convict this man, too.
Yeah.
They're going to set an example with this man. I really believe that.
It's so brazen.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he does. It's just, and being brazen isn't a defense, you know.
And his lies are all being recorded. And MSNBC and all these other news channels are recording all this stuff. They're helping the prosecution out. You know, they can just go and pull tapes from these different people. And, they gathering evidence, new witnesses. This is one of the cases I would love to have worked on, just the experience. But they are going to bite a piece of him off.
Yeah.
This is a peculiarly American hell that we put people like this in, which is he's going to spend the rest of his life, probably the rest of his life dealing with lawyers and indictments and angry prosecutors. And, you know, it's just, he could be having a completely different life if he didn't insist on this stupid campaign to run for president. You know what I mean?
I think he loved the fight. I think this is what Trump feeds on. And I think everybody thinks Trump is worried. I think Trump is loving this. It's a
really? Chance. You do? Really? Okay. Maybe he's
like that battle, that tug of war. I've been with these different type of criminals like that.
Uh-huh.
I love just to see how far they can go. Huh. He's won a lot of battles, if you think about it.
Yeah, and he's pushing the line constantly to touch that. So I think your theory is probably correct.
Yeah. I think what's funny is that the Republican, that he's been a nightmare for so long for the Democrats, now he's a nightmare for the Republicans. And I wonder who's rooting for him to get indicted more, the Democrats or the Republicans? I think the Republicans, there's a lot of them who are secretly rooting for his indictment because they want to make sure he goes away.
Yeah. Brian, what are you finding at the Free Press? I mean, how's the web traffic regarding the haters and the trollers? When it comes to Trump these days, have you noticed a decline from, say, 5-6 years ago?
No, it's always been consistent. It's always been the same. But it's always hard to tell if it's a robot or an actual person because, like, no matter what comes out, they'll still come with the same rhetoric. Like, and it just gets tiring to keep having to read it over and over again. But I feel like it hasn't been any more or less. Like, the traffic is always great for Trump. When he went away from Twitter, you could feel like a difference. Like you could feel like there wasn't much to report anymore because no one's checking Truth Social or anything like that. And after a while, it feels like you're doing a disservice by reporting on every little lie. So, I mean, at some point you have to make the conscious decision just to leave it alone, you know, page views or not.
You guys should go ahead and have like a screening thing that you make the posters spell words like Constitution, and if they spell it right, you know it's a robot.
Well, you know, it's interesting that Trump, I think before Trump ran in 2015, starting really, and then 2016, he really helped the Washington Post. He really helped the New York Times, CNN, their traffic, their subscribers just went up and up under Trump. And, you know, I talked to a friend at the New York Times about 6 months after Trump lost. And I go, well, how are things going over there? And he said, well, we're trying to figure out how to survive in the, you know, the post-Trump era, but he's back, really. So I think.
If it's true that all he wants is for people to pay attention to him, I guess this makes sense. And the fact that the remainder of his life sounds like a living hell to me, I hope reflects well on my character and shows that I am not a psychopath like him, because I can't imagine anything worse. You know,
maybe if all he wants is attention, we should have made him the host of Jeopardy. Could have been every fucking night he could be on TV.
See, I don't think it's just attention. It's the fight. You know, if you ever seen that court battle or whatever, it's that fight, that adrenaline that's going on and things. And I think Trump, like, let's see how far I can push the envelope.
Yeah, maybe so. It's possible. I don't know.
He loves fighting the establishment, too. He loves going against the establishment. He loves this whole, you know, people don't realize what Trump is doing right now. He's trying to brainwash his jury right now. I really believe he's setting up his jury right now.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, Alan, I mean, given the fact that he goes off script, it doesn't really matter what the clues are because he'll just make his own ones up on Jeopardy. So that'll be kind of a hootenanny. But on this issue about Ira, you mentioned that he wants to, of course, play to the crowd. One of his big slogans is that he's a winner. It doesn't seem as though he's been having too much success in the win column. I mean, do you think that he can ever get that narrative back?
I think from his supporters, I think they never went away. Yeah. I think they ignore the stuff, like the bad stuff. You know, he lost this or he lost that. I don't think they even pay attention to most of it. They just listen to what's coming out of his mouth. And I think they're using that as an excuse just to pretty much try to project whatever they really, what they're feeling about everything that's going on too. Yeah. So like I say, like, you know, I think during Wadir, when they're picking that jury, they got to be very careful. And watching the Trump supporters that's coming on there too, because I think he's setting up this whole thing for a hung jury. I think Trump feels like a win is a win, even when he's losing. But if he win a little bit, he feels like it's a win, you know.
Yeah,
but still loves him. Isn't his pathology such that if there's a loss, it's not his fault? If there's a win, it's attributable to him.
Yes, right. That is.
You mean like what he tried with the midterms there, Joel?
Yeah, essentially saying, you know, I get credit if you win, and if you lose, it's all you.
He literally seems to believe that is true.
Right. But he's like George Costanza. It's not like
heads on wins.
But he believes all those things to be so. What I think is interesting is that when I see him physically, he looks more tired. He's, you know, even his invective sounds weaker. I think he's just, you know, kind of flagging away a little bit here and getting weaker as time goes on. And that deterioration isn't going to change. I think that downward trajectory for Trump is already determined. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to alter. And people are going to kick the shit out of him as he's falling down, which is going to be great to see.
Oh, I compare Trump and Kwame Kilpatrick the same. It's just like at a national level.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And they set them up. They can hit them with these little state charges. You know, that's going to increase the sentencing guidelines. Once he get convicted on the felony charges, the same thing that happened to Kwame Kilpatrick. So, you know, they're setting them up. I really believe that.
I like that point. I mean, with the exception of people like Elise Stefanik and Ted Cruz and Jim Jordan, the real stalwarts, I mean, you're seeing some wavering even with people like Lindsey Graham and others. It kind of reminds me of like after Tiger Woods, you know, was introduced to the nine iron by his ex-wife. After that, golfers, they weren't scared of him anymore. Right. I mean, they felt that Tiger was vulnerable. I mean, especially from his ex-wife. So, I mean, you know, the very idea then that Trump is showing, and you're right, Joel. I mean, he just doesn't seem to be really in it. And the fact that his favorite child of all time, Ivanka, says, you know, no mas, that must have hurt him. That's got to be a big one.
Do you know where Ivanka is today?
Miami Beach.
No, she's in Qatar. Or as you have to say it with your Arabic speaker voice.
Are you talking to Alan or me?
You, Saeed.
It's Qatar.
Qatar. Okay, Qatar. That's where she is. She's in Qatar. Because I saw somebody posted a picture of her talking to somebody in a burnous. I don't know if it was like, I'm sure it was some high-ranking official in Qatar.
She's looking for investments in her companies.
Well, it said, and they said the cut line, oh, don't worry. My support of gay people doesn't go so far as to actually do anything.
Oh, wow. Brian, you mentioned Trump on Twitter. Well, apparently Elon Musk, the new owner of Twitter, has given amnesty to all pariahs who were on Twitter. And so apparently the wretched refuse is back, if they want to, on the social media. Do you think that Trump will go back, given, as you said, that Truth Social is about as complicated as looking for Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime? the very idea that this is the platform that he's craving and that this is then going to change things around a bit. Brian?
I think if he's, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think if he's smart, if his handlers are smart, the people that are around him are smart, that's the best place
for him
to get the biggest audience. Like,
yeah,
most people don't know about Truth Social or how it, like you said, how it works or anything like that. So yeah, I expect him to come back, but it's going to be something like, you know, Elon has already tweeted something where it basically was begging him to come back.
Yeah.
I thought that was cute. It's going to be something.
Alex Jones is going to lose still banned, I believe.
Its cachet, though? I mean, isn't Twitter really losing its cachet with Musk at the helm? I mean, people are going to find some other platform.
People are starting like,
Twitter.
People are already, I can't remember what it's called. My wife.
There's something called Mastodon.
Yeah, like people are already leaving.
There's another one called.
Yes, that's the one my wife
Mastodon,
is on.
Yeah.
There's another one called Post, I think, which is coming up, and they're starting a wait list for it. And it seems like most people have gone over to Instagram, and certainly Gen Z, which played its own role in the midterms in places like Arizona and even here in Michigan. I mean, did you hear the statistics that 96% of the students who registered on campus at places like U of M and Michigan State went for the Democrats, and a similar percentage in the high 90s went for Kerry Lake's opponent in Arizona. They don't tweet. They go to Instagram and other
platforms.
And TikTok, absolutely.
Yeah, there's other forums. So it's just, you know, and that's why Musk, you know, buys this 44 billion albatross is what it's going to end up being. I just don't think Twitter is what it was when Trump made Twitter, right? Trump is why I went to Twitter, was because of that. But I think Twitter's lost its cachet, and Trump is on social, and he's
hammered. You talk about how some people have gone to Instagram, and it's true, some people do. But I mean, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Twitter is by far my favorite. I mean, Facebook daily becomes more and more like an old folks' home with show you pictures of my grandchildren. Instagram is fine, but it's like, it's not really, I mean, you can dialogue on Twitter. I mean, you can shit talk on Twitter with somebody else, and you really can't do that on Instagram. And I may be a dead ender. I think I'm a Twitter dead ender, but I really do enjoy it. I mean, I love to wake up in the morning and just kind of scroll through it and see like what happened overnight, breaking news, who's talking, you know, who's speaking or not speaking to whom. And so, I mean, I don't think I think what's going to happen to Twitter is it's going to have a catastrophic or near catastrophic technical failure. I don't think people are going to leave it because, you know, they're letting back white supremacists open and avowed and happy to admit it, white supremacists. I think they're going to end up leaving because there's going to be a lot of fail whales. You know, the site's going to start to fall apart. You know, the wheels are going to start to come off almost, but I don't know.
You know what? I feel like next you're going to tell me that using AOL email is not cool.
Hey, I still have an AOL account.
I did not call you a lazy journalist. You're a very hardworking journalist, but I think it's funny because whenever I read like David Brooks or, you know, some of these other, you know, turd jugglers, it's like they're all out there saying, well, I was speaking to a conveniently unidentified taxi driver who agrees with everything that I say.
See, I mean, I used to sell high-end audio equipment when I was in college, and the industry standard for cassette decks was Nakamichi.
Nakamichi, yeah.
No one's buying Nakamichi anymore. They're not buying tape decks. So I'm wondering if Twitter may be like that, that at one time it was really state-of-the-art, the industry standard, and like Nakamichi or my beloved BlackBerry phone, they've kind of gone the way of the dodo.
Absolutely. And that's where computers going.
Entirely possible, and maybe Mastodon will catch on. I don't know. The people I know who have gone to Mastodon say it's more pleasant in many ways because it's easier to form a bubble around your particular interests, and so you don't end up stumbling across, you know, some piece of shit's tweet that, you know, or Donald Trump or whatever. But at the same time, it's more boring that way. And maybe this is one of these things where my prediction is nothing, but I do like Twitter. So,
well, we have a call in or a comment here from Michael Pappas. Virtual reality will replace everything.
Not in my world.
given the travails over at Meta, though, that might be a bit optimistic. So virtual reality might happen, but who knows if it's going to happen by way of Mark Zuckerberg, who laid off 13% of his workforce, something like 11,000 people.
I don't enjoy that kind of thing. I mean, early on, I think I may have tried to kind of, I was sort of Second Life curious, you know, which was the early virtual reality platform. And it never did anything for me. I mean, it just seemed like everybody could pretend to be somebody else, and that wasn't necessarily a good
thing. I'll tell you what, Nancy, you put on a pair of goggles and you play you play cricket in the virtual world. It will change this life and your virtual one.
Really? Since I've never played cricket in regular life, you know, it's like, yeah. Did you hear this? Michael Pappas just called me old and on my birthday. So there you go.
Right. That's happy birthday to Nancy.
Happy birthday, Nancy.
And the thing is, it is my threshold to being officially old birthday too. I'm 65, wow. So there you go. Crazy. Gosh, oh, he's trying to take it back now.
That's sad. Not even Paul McCartney will sing about you guys anymore. So Nancy, you mentioned Ivanka because it seems as though you're following her around the world.
I don't follow her around the world. I follow Ivanka shit talkers around the world. But go ahead.
Well, she is in Qatar for the World Cup, which began last week. With the host country not doing very well. They didn't do well today, losing 3-1 to Senegal. It is certainly a World Cup that has courted quite a bit of controversy, quite a bit of media coverage beyond what is happening on the football pitches. How many of you have been watching it, and what is your take on the World Cup?
I've been watching football. I haven't watched it at all.
Nothing. Okay, nothing. Alan.
I've watched minutes of it, but I feel like that having it in Qatar, whatever, is just totally ridiculous. I mean, you can't have a tournament like that you need it in a secular nation where everyone can feel included, where you can drink beer, where gay people can, you know, be gay. And it's just really, it's insulting that, and it's all about the money. Qatar is such a wealthy country, and yet it's so backward. It's still, you know, ruled by, you know, I think Sharia law is still really it's a bigoted country in every way. And on top of that, they bring in foreign workers, because a lot of them are so wealthy, they don't work in Qatar. And, you know, the big surgery there is the, for weight loss,
bariatric surgery.
Yeah, the bariatric surgery. That's really a big one because a lot of people don't work. They bring in foreigners. Foreigners fall from there. They wash the skyscrapers, the windows. They fall. There's thousands of foreign workers who die. It's ridiculous that we give them a break. Somebody in FIFA must be getting some gelt, as we say in Israel, for.
Well, the New York Times had a special section last Sunday when the World Cup kicked off. And P.S., you seem to be more of a soccer fan than I am, Saeed. How long does this go?
It will go till December the 18th, I believe.
Oh, my God. So like almost a month then. It's even longer than the fucking Olympics. But anyway, okay. And they had some really good stories about it. And what it reminded me, and you know, I'm not a footy fan, so I just, you know, it's interesting enough to kind of watch for a few moments, but that's about it. But one of the things that came out through this is FIFA is at least as corrupt as the International Olympic Committee, and that's pretty corrupt. And there was absolutely a lot of gelt changing hands to do this. And, you know, it was their dream. It was Qatar kind of thought this would put us on the world map in a way that having, you know, killing migrant workers just hasn't been able to accomplish. And I don't know, it's fascinating to me because I'm interested in city states or countries, Middle Eastern countries, where there's literally so much money that not a single legal citizen has to work. And I like Saudi and Qatar, I suppose, where all the talent is imported. All of this stuff goes on. It really is an indictment of what happens to, or what money can do. I mean, the corruption of money, I should say, perhaps.
And they have modern skyscraper. It's a very modern looking place, but it's very, I think, very primitive in other
ways.
Well,
Saeed's actually been there. Tell us about.
So first of all, Alan, I would say that bariatric surgery is the second most common surgery there. The first is surgery on the wings of falcons, because Doha has the largest falcon hospital in the world. People fly their falcons, because they can't fly themselves, into Doha to get worked on. Also, You're right. You can't be gay in public in Qatar, but you can't be straight in public either. Public displays of affection just really aren't part of the cultural vibe there. So for that reason,
well, it's too hot to go outside. So probably just do it behind closed doors in here.
It's too hot to get hot with somebody outside. Yeah. And actually, it's one of the reasons why the diabetes rate in places like Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and everywhere else, where you would think they have a very healthy diet. Mm-hmm. Everyone eats fast food and nobody exercises. And if you go to the malls, you'll see these signs, three different ones. One for if you have type 1 diabetes, one if you have type 2 diabetes, and the third one if you have gestational diabetes. And of course, all of these are in a sequence as you're approaching the food court, which is never empty. So there are a lot of issues. I think if you go to these Gulf states, it has the same feeling as Las Vegas, except without the public debauchery on display there. Huh. They spent $220 billion in the last 12 years on not just the World Cup, but the infrastructure. Just to show you how small a place this is, 300,000 is the indigenous population, 3 million foreign workers in a place not bigger than Connecticut. The annual GDP, thanks to liquefied natural gas, is $180 billion, wow, which means that their 12-year GDP was $2.2 trillion,
yeah,
which means that all of the spending on roads, bridges, metro system, building new cities around new stadiums was 10% of their GDP annually that they put into infrastructure.
And what happens to all this stuff when the World Cup is over?
Well, one of the stadiums is called Stadium 974, which happens to be the country code for Qatar. Okay. It is also made out of 974 shipping containers. And so once the World Cup is done, they're just simply going to dismantle it, and the shipping containers will be used to ship stuff.
Wow.
The okay. other stadiums are going to be used for the Qatar Football League.
Okay.
Why they have seven, which are the farthest distance between any two is 40 minutes drive.
Huh.
Yeah. But okay. Yeah, well, that's,
you,
you know, it kind of reminds me of Caddyshack when Rodney Dangerfield goes into the pro shop. Give me six of those. Give me 12 of those. You know, they can do it. It's an interesting place.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Certainly, if you ever get the chance of flying Qatar Airways, which is fantastic, is stop off in Doha. It wouldn't take you more than a day to see, maybe even a half day to see the sights. But worth the stopover.
Would I have to wear a tablecloth? Do they
no.
tolerate Western women there?
Those are two different questions, but let me go ahead and take them in sequence. No, you wouldn't have to wear a tablecloth, and yes, they do tolerate Western women.
Okay, so it's kind of like Dubai that way. So yeah.
It is, but it's actually, I mean, especially for people in the region, they prefer Doha because it's not as frenetic as Dubai.
Okay.
Even within the UAE, Abu Dhabi is much more sober than Dubai. I'll just give you one more anecdote. I was in Doha in March. I was in Dubai in January. And Dubai on a Tuesday night is crazier than Las Vegas on a Saturday night.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. Vegas even seems a bit sleepy compared to it. So, but it is the world's biggest sport. And you will find it being part of a conversation even within 2 hours when the United States is going to play England. In what's going to be a very big challenge for the United States.
Yeah, that's like, this is one sport where the U.S. is just always an also-ran. You know, they never really seem to be competitive. And I heard somebody, I don't know, some idiot sports bro saying, you know, it's our one chance for the miracle on ice. You know, only miracle on the pitch, but. Whatever.
Well, the miracle on the pitch was Saudi Arabia beating heavily favored Argentina.
Argentina, yeah. I remember that. That was something.
Team USA's next opponent after today is going to be Iran, who beat
Wales
2-0 today. So, yeah.
I love it when he gets British on us and he says things like Zed and nil.
And nil. Yeah. I think, Alan, I think the headline for that is Iran nukes Wales, but, you know, too soon. So, more locally, since we are talking about sports, 7 Michigan State Spartan football players have been charged with assaulting Michigan football players in the tunnel at Michigan Stadium when they played a couple of weeks ago. One player has been charged with felonious assault and the others with garden variety misdemeanor assault. What do you think about what's going on here? And is this, unfortunately, the sideshow that's gotten more publicity than the actual game? Which, if you're a Michigan fan, you should be happy. Yeah.
Those charges, what do you think? Are those serious charges that really they get pleaded down?
I mean, they're going to mess these kids up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not good on any level.
It depends on, is it high misdemeanors or just regular misdemeanor charges they charge them with?
I'm not sure. It seemed as though they were medium level.
I think they were simple assault.
Simple assault and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the felonious assault. You know, but you'll see if they, you know, hopefully, I mean, I hate to see young men get hit with these, you know, it's a heated game. It's a robbery. I hate to see charges. I didn't see the video. I don't know if there were injuries or damages. I just hate to see young men.
I think it was an assault though. It's after a game, the game's over, they're in the tunnel. And then one of the guys is taking a helmet and just beating on the guy.
That must be the felonious assault charge.
Yeah. I understand that. I got it. There's no excuse for it, but
look, we've seen NHL. In the NHL, we've seen on the ice where players have been charged criminally for doing stuff. And I think there has to be some level of civility there that you just – there's no limitations to what you can do to try to – really maim somebody, which the guy was trying to really do some serious damage.
And he's getting charged. It's just a tragic situation. I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's just sad as hell. Yeah. They're young men. You know, they got a future ahead of them. It's just, I hate to say it.
But I think they have to set a tone, too. They have to set a tone with these young men, too, and say, hey, look here, you can't get angry and start whipping on somebody just because you're angry about something. You know,
right.
We got to draw the line somewhere. Yeah. I think it's like, we got to set this example with these guys, too, before I get too carried away, too.
You know? And then it becomes a question of Mel Tucker. Is it a reflection of, you know, is there not enough discipline in the program? Is it a little bit too loose? You know, you got to look at your coach because that's that, you know, the coach is ultimately the captain of that ship.
I thought Mel Tucker, I'm a graduate of Michigan State. I was a little bit, I saw him marching up and down the line, you know, on the sideline there. He looked like a raving lunatic during the whole game. I mean, I thought it was scary. I'm thinking, like, what the hell is going on with this guy? I know he's trying to, like, psych up his players and stuff like that, but I don't know what message that sends, and probably not a good one when these guys go in the tunnel and think, you know, this is just a sport in the end. You know, it's a game.
It's a locker room.
It's big business, though.
It's a game in the end. You know, really, it's a sport, and we've taught some of these students, you know, just poor sportsmanship, and that is obviously. I mean, look, the Michigan student probably, the player probably said something, but you know, there's trash talk in all these sports. Yeah, it's like part of the game.
You know, trash talk in the lineup, I imagine, but you know.
So you've got the players, you've got the coaching, and then you also have the alumni network. And it seems as though the alumni network hasn't really been very vocal with what's been going on. I mean, by now you would have thought maybe they would have been calling for Mel Tucker to be fired, some kind of accountability. It's been kind of quiet.
Nobody at Michigan State, I think, thinks Mel Tucker needs to be fired. I could be maybe somebody in the English department or, you know, a Shakespearean scholar, but I can't believe that anybody who cares about Michigan State football wants to see the coach fired. I mean,
they did fire Juwan Howard.
Unless they have a bad year next year. If he wins 3 or 4 games next year, they're going to want to see him fired.
Look at Juwan Howard. He smacked the
coach, right? Which was crazy.
Coach. And he, you know, a lot of people thought he should have been fired, and he was not fired.
Right. As a Michigan alum, I didn't go crazy. You know, I thought what he did was crazy, but I didn't like, you know, to write out and scream, he's got to be gone. You know, I like Juwan Howard. They got a great program.
I like Juwan Howard too. I think he's, you know, a class guy, but he lost his shit.
Yeah, he went nuts. He lost his mind. He made a bad, you know, had bad judgment in that moment.
Right.
You know, like these kids did. They had bad judgment in that moment.
We all can't have the moral clarity of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences and take action against Will Smith for slapping somebody up on the stage, you know. So, you know, I think there's a lesson to be learned from them when it comes to the NCAA and sports. Look, I mean, there's other factors too. And I mean, again, not trying to absolve anything that these players did. These players are also, what, 18, 19, 20, 21? I mean, they really are kids. And the pressures that are put on them. And I think something also needs to be said about the design of Michigan Stadium.
Yeah.
And that tunnel, the fact that it's a single tunnel, and there was a rather provocative move of a Michigan player not waiting his turn while the Michigan State Spartans were leaving, having been defeated. And by the way, I say this as somebody who went to Michigan. It seems as though there's a lot going on here that
How old is Michigan Stadium?
Yeah, has that tunnel been there for 100 years?
I was just going to say, how old is Michigan Stadium? Do we really need to go messing with the design of the tunnel because a few people couldn't you know, lose with a little bit of grace?
The tunnel's been there forever.
Yeah, but Nancy, they did mess with the stadium when alumni wanted more luxury suites and boxes.
Oh, I know that, but that brings in more money.
You've been sharing that tunnel forever, I think.
Yeah.
And now, you know, so you can't change a tunnel. I mean,
you know what? Maybe you just need an extra security guard in the tunnel.
Or maybe these young men just need to, like, take a chill pill. It's like, you win or lose.
They need to learn, too, that, you know, we can't just use bias on people because we get angry or, you know, we get our shelf break and all of a sudden we just start hitting on people and things like that.
Right.
We make too many excuses. And I think after the Trump era, people are making excuses for a lot of this stuff that wouldn't be tolerated like 5 or 6 years ago, you know.
Exactly.
Even some of the things we say to each other, you know.
Right.
Don't forget about the Cleveland Cavalier or the Cleveland Brown who took the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback's helmet and hit him with it. I don't think he got charged.
No, he did. There was Garrett Miles.
That's their example.
I think also the fact that we say, you know, they're 20, 21 years old, it's like, that's, you know, they're not, it's not like they're 5 years old. That's, you know, there is some responsibility that comes with being a football player, with being that age. It's, you don't get a free pass just because you're, you know,
then suspend them for a game.
Most of these charges, they're going to have a complainant file a complaint anyway. So maybe on the Cleveland Brown thing, maybe the guy didn't want to press charges.
Yeah, I think Rudolph.
They said it was over a racial slur. But there was one thing I did want to mention. I appreciated what the MSU interim president said. I thought I had it pulled up, but it's gone again. But she kind of just said, like, we're going to support them. At the end of the day, they're students, they're Michigan State students, and we're going to, you know, stand by their side. We're not just going to throw them to the court system. And I really appreciate her saying that.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, I'm trying to find who at U of M teaches Shakespeare, because that's the person you want in the tunnel to be running security, isn't it? You want somebody that detached, that impartial, that disinterested. I think that might actually actually work here. So I think we got somebody named Puccilla, maybe. Yeah. Okay. We'll go ahead and find out there. Well, there's other sports happening here in the Metro Detroit area. I don't know if anybody watched the Lions yesterday against the Buffalo Bills.
You did, really? I did. I paid $30 for the rest of until next July on this NFL Sports Pass to watch the game. I watched the last two games.
Wow.
It starts today. It started last night at 7:30, normally 8 o'clock here. So.
Huh. I watched it like intermittently as I made Thanksgiving dinner, and it was a little bit of a heartbreaker.
Yeah, I watched it intently, screaming every 30 seconds. And, The worst call, you know, that fourth down, that call in the, you know, with 26 seconds and not to use your two, got two timeouts in your pocket. It's third and one. It's like not a, you know.
Yeah.
Either you run the ball, you get the first down, call your timeout, and then take shots in the end zone. Run the ball, don't get your first down, let the clock go to three, kick your fucking field goal. Drove me insane.
I think the Lions need the Lions need to hire somebody, and somebody apparently some other teams do this, somebody who's who just gets
manages
involved
the
with
clock.
Time management. Yeah. And they do a lousy job. I mean, it's third and one. Get the first down and then putts around, then do whatever you want to do. But I have to say the difference was normally the only difference was, you know, in the back of your mind after a while you're saying they're going to lose. But normally, normally it's like you're certain they're going to lose. And this time you were thinking
they teased
maybe,
us.
Maybe they're not. Normally you're like, forget it. They're down. You know, there's 2 minutes left. There's too much time left. They're gonna lose, but they look good in a lot of ways.
You know, he's cost them games. He's done what coaches shouldn't do. It's your coach can't lose you a game. He's lost them three.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you think that? I mean, and I know here in Detroit we're long suffering fans of the Lions. Do you think that though in this last stretch that they've had that people's attitudes toward them have shifted? I mean, they certainly weren't playing like poet warriors. But at the same time, I mean, they stuck in there. They had grit. And there was that feeling that, you know what, we might go four in a row against a great team like the Bills.
You're right.
Look, the announcers
game in November, which, believe me, for a Lions fan is very rare. So there was a meaningful game in November. Thank God, you know, you lost, you know, okay. But it was a meaningful game. You know, I was happy for that. And I love watching the game. I just, you know, it just drives me crazy when you see things that, like, you know, they're academic. They're not difficult decisions to make.
The announcers, I feel like the announcers are changing the narrative already. They're saying, oh, my God, these Detroit Lions, they're for real. They're going on and on. I feel like it's the same sort of turning point when the M&M Chrysler commercial played at the Super Bowl in 2011, where people finally said, what? There's more to Detroit than just crime. And they saw Eminem and they said, this is a cool city. This is like, and I feel like that same narrative is now coming to the Detroit Lions.
We're trying to get like a Cubs narrative, lovable losers. They're adorable, but it's a rough one.
Well, look, by the way, speaking of Eminem, I was at I was getting a shawarma the other day in Jerusalem, and I was wearing my tiger hat, and this young guy is probably like early 20s. He says to me, he says, where are you from? And I said, Detroit. I go, you know about Detroit? He goes, yeah, Detroit. That's where M&M's from.
Right.
So
not the Motor City anymore.
Not the Motor City. Not Motown.
We have Danny Fenster's great story that he wrote for us about the guy in Myanmar who worships M&M and set up this whole restaurant around M&M. And then when I did a story last year on a African Ugandan refugee, guy who is fleeing Uganda with the clothes on his back, and he's crying on the plane, and he talks to the guy next to him, says, what's going on? He's like, I'm gay. My father doesn't accept it. I've got to leave the country. And he says, well, you can ask for asylum. In the U.S., there's a place called Freedom House. And he goes, well, where is Freedom House? He goes, well, there's several. There's one in Washington. There's one in Detroit, and he goes, oh, 8 Mile. that's where Eminem is from. I'll go to the one in Detroit. Yep. So
the guy mentioned 8 Mile to me too. Yeah. I said, I grew up about, you know, 3/4 of a mile from 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Not that it mattered. I mean, when you look at 8 Mile, it's like, what the hell is 8 Mile?
See, people look at me when I tell them I'm from Detroit when I'm overseas, and they're like, oh my God, the MC5. I'm like, thank you. Thank you so much. It restores my faith. Well, one last thing to talk about here, and that is that Governor Whitmer has appointed the first African-American woman to the Michigan Supreme Court. Kyra Harris Bolden is now the recipient of a milestone. Good move of progress moving forward.
I want to hear Joel's idea on this.
Well, my view is anytime you have a Democrat on the Supreme Court, it's good for plaintiffs and it's good for rights. It's good for individual rights. You know, we were plagued by the Engler years of having a packed court.
that restricted individual rights and had rulings upon rulings that made little sense, but were pro-business, pro-insurance company. And I think if you have a change in the complexion of the court in every single way, you're going to get more equity in these rulings. You're going to get, they're going to be more more individual-oriented, more plaintiff-oriented. I think they're going to allow causes of action to go forward more often and not close the doors of the courthouse, which is what, again, the Engler years did and really had an impact that we feel to this day. So I'm very happy that Governor Whitmer appointed this woman. I don't know anything about her. I have not dealt with her. Haven't been before her in any way. If she was a judge before, I don't have a clue. But I'm glad that she's appointed somebody who's young, who's diverse.
She ran and did not get elected for Supreme Court. But she's a liberal Democrat. And so always good.
If you're
a liberal Democrat.
What's going to change, though, for lawyers is that for years, lawyers like myself would file in federal court to get away from the state court because it was so onerous and just so unfair. And I think now you're seeing lawyers in my area of law filing more in state court, thinking that now that we have a Democratic Supreme Court or filled with Democrats or, you know, majority as such, that people are now going to file more in state courts, these civil rights claims that typically are filed in federal court. So it will have an impact. It may be subtle, but it will have an impact.
Let's hear Ira, from Team Todd.
Ira and Brian, I mean, she's filling in an empty seat of Elizabeth McCormack, and she will have to run in November 2024 for the new term. Will this help her by the fact that she'll be running as an incumbent? What do you think?
I think so. I think it will. And plus, give her an opportunity to show what she got, you know, show what she's all about. You know, and people get familiar with her and everything else. But I think so. I think people are looking for some new blood in the whole system, the whole, you know, legal, political system and everything. But I think people are looking for some new blood, you know, some new ideals, too.
Okay, very good. Well, Alan, whether we are in Metro Detroit or in Israel, I think it is that time of the show.
All right. Let's
see. Downtown Detroit, Robert Wells, Smart of the Week.
I love Robert. Such a nice guy.
I'm surprised that you haven't, like, tried to flag somebody down in Israel to do one of those.
Schmuck, it puts in the week. He's a schmuck. That's a good idea.
Somebody with that community theater Yiddish accent that you do.
Right.
Well, just have them say a bunch of words that we can keep them on, you know, just on ice right. or whenever we would need them. Okay.
Great idea.
Who wants to go first with a schmuck of the week?
I'll go. I'll give you one. I got it. Chris Lee's Knows Best. Those guys are the schmucks of the week. I don't know if you know who they are. Chris Lee, it's a family. It's like the prosperity gospel. They have a reality show. I don't know what channel it was, but they have a reality show. And they were recently busted for tax fraud. And they got sentenced to, I think the wife got 7 years. The husband got 12 years. And they were looking, and their thing was, well, just like Job, we have been victimized. You know, God has chosen us to suffer. It's like, well, unlike Job, you got a tax fraud for $30 million. I mean, I don't think, you know, this is God. Yeah.
Job was a very
going to get them through this, but the Job thing was like, I don't know what Job. You know, Job was like kind of a sad son of a. You know, got hit.
Job was an honorable man.
But he endured misery and still had faith in God.
Yes.
These people invited misery. You know, they were criminals.
I think the word you're looking for is soliciting misery.
Yes, soliciting misery. And the Yiddish word for them would be ganefs, I believe. So, they are my schmucks of the week. You know, living a high life on a throne of lies, to quote Will Ferrell.
You stand on a you sit on a throne of lies.
Okay. Who's next? Ira, Brian.
I'm going to go with Mike Pence. I know we didn't talk about him today or anything like that. But I saw his interview and, you know, and some of the questions they asked him about Trump and just how he just kind of did a moonwalk on everything. And I just thought for somebody that, you know, this guy was threatened by Trump and his people to hang and murder him, he couldn't find enough balls just to step up and just say something honest about the whole situation. He's still playing politics. So I don't have a lot of respect for that man, you know, and I think he's my smuck of the week.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Now I can't unthink Mike Pence doing the moonwalk. So thank you for thank you for that brain worm. Okay. Brian, you want to try to go past your dad on that one?
Yeah, I wasn't listening, but we're doing Smoke of the Week.
Yeah.
Let's do the shooter's father in Colorado Springs. You guys see that?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Aaron Brink.
Thank you. I didn't see that. Okay. Wow.
I sent you the link.
Okay. I'll take a look at it.
Yep. So what I'm not familiar
with what you said.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Well, they're talking to him about the Colorado Springs LGBT club, BPT club shooting, and he's like, wait, my son was at a gay club? And they're like, yeah, but he's a child. He goes, oh, glad he's not gay. And he goes, I'm a Mormon, I'm a Catholic conservative. He mentioned Matt. Yeah, he just said a bunch of, and he seemed like he was really high or like, you know, or drunk or something, but it was just a weird interview, and it was like he showed no remorse. He wasn't sad. It kind of just was like, well, you know, and I think I read that he said something like we're about action. I teach my son action or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He said we're Mormon. We don't do gay. And he is a former porn actor.
Wouldn't you think that Mormons don't do porn either? But
I know, right? Probably all they do.
They're selective. They're selective in what they do.
Although I have to say, I did chuckle over some of the titles in his, shall we say, IMDb profile. So there you go.
And remember, his dad is Randy Vopel, California Assemblyman, big MAGA supporter. I believe it was Oliver Wendell Holmes who very sagely said, three generations of imbeciles is enough. So I think that's been taken care of. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Nancy, Alan?
I'll go. I think I got to give it to Elon Musk. Although I give it to him with a certain qualm in my heart because I am actually actively enjoying him, like, trying to drive this clown car off a cliff, you know, and it's really something. But the fact that he's letting back on not just Donald Trump, not just Marjorie Taylor Greene, but actual, avowed, open, I hate people of color, white supremacists who are not even remotely apologetic about it, is just so disgusting. He's such a piece of shit. He's a schmuck. So there you go. So
he's a schmuck.
Yeah,
that's right. Almost an anagram. Okay, Alan.
I'm going to go. There's Jim Jordan is one of them. I mean, he is really setting the table for January going forward to be really horrific for the Republicans. Are going to be so, they're just salivating at the idea of trying to impeach whoever they can try to impeach, whether it's Biden or whether it's, you know, Merrick Garland, you know, the head of Homeland Security. I mean, these guys are so, I mean, really just horrible, horrible people. And, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to get some committee appointments. It's just really going to be, it's like the dumb kids are going to be in charge.
Yeah. But, you know, I think Jim Jordan is blowing that smoke screen too. And I think Jim Jordan, you're going to see him indicted as well. That's my gut feeling.
Oh, I hope so. That'd be fantastic.
He's a despicable person.
Your lips are God's ears for many people, Ira. Okay.
Who's yours?
Brian, actually, I had Aaron Brink as one of my schmucks, but I figured that somebody amongst you would be prescient enough to choose that. I would have chosen Kanye West declaring his presidency for 2024, which just happened 2 hours ago.
He's running, huh? Wow.
Yeah. But given the fact that this is a holiday week, my schmuck of the week is none other than Mimi herself, Mariah Carey, who yesterday was in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. And while she was lip-syncing the song, which of course is perfectly fine and understandable given the rules of the parade, she barely even dialed it in and gave a performance so flaccid that even Small Hands Trump would have been jealous of seeing somebody being that flaccid. Giving a rendition of her much cherished All I Want for Christmas Is You was so, so sad that I'm going to have to drown my sorrows in a 24-hour marathon of Love Actually. So Mariah Carey, You're my schmuck of the week. Yes, Nancy.
Didn't I read somewhere that she tried to trademark the phrase like Empress of Christmas or Queen of Christmas or something like that? You know, like Michael Jackson wanted to be the King of Pop, and they wouldn't let her do it. The trademark office rejected it, which maybe she was just dispirited. So
I don't think they stopped laughing about it. But go ahead, Alan.
I was going to say my Mariah Carey story. I was in New York, supposed to meet up with a friend, and she's like, "You got to come to 53rd Street at this church." Blah blah blah. Billy Joel's here, and it was Mariah Carey's wedding. She was coming out of the church, and by the time I got there, it was worth it because Robert De Niro came out of the church. So
wow, he went to her wedding. Did.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
My favorite thing I've heard about Mariah Carey. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say Tony Danza, you know, they blocked off half the street. He was waving to everyone and nobody was there to see him. But.
No one waved back. My favorite story about Mariah Carey is that she was in the movie Glitter. And I read a review of the movie in The Guardian out of the UK. And it said, as for Ms. Carey's acting, she was easily out-acted by the Formica countertop in the kitchen sink. I'm like, and this is why I wax reflective about British English and anecdotes there, Nancy. All right. Well, listen, thank you all for taking time out of your Black Friday and your Thanksgiving long weekend to be with us. Thank you, Ira Todd. Thank you, Brian Todd. Thank you, Joel Sklar. Thank you, Nancy Derringer. And Alan Lengel, why don't you say what you would say to a taxi driver in Israel?
Drive home safely.
There you go. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
You guys too. Be well.